Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, this evening our special guest is Dr. Colin Ross, who is one of those unique individuals who's had an opportunity to play an important part in the history of our nation, unsung hero, but a gentleman who's written extensively about the CIA mind control projects, about Operation Bluebird, and some of these mind control programs, about how they experimented on human beings here in America and created dissociated personalities. I think really to understand so much of what is going on in America, well, you really need to have to understand something known as Operation Paperclip. Now, we do have a four-tape set on that, four interviews going into the background. One of the most macabre and carefully concealed projects of our invisible government. And after the Second World War, there were a number of ruthless and really brutal Nazi scientists who were brought to the United States. Now, most people think that they were brought here to help with our space program. Oh, we had to beat the Russians into space. Never pointing out, of course, we were financing the Russians and most of their activities at the same time. But we had to have the enemy, and we had to beat the enemy. And so we could justify bringing some of the Nazis, like von Braun, who was a Nazi, who had worked with the Nazis very, very closely, bringing him and many of his cohorts to the United States. But what they never talk about is the scientists we brought here to work on biological warfare to create some of the diseases that are plaguing millions of Americans today. And even more sinister, some of the scientists who came here to work on mind control projects, a continuation of the same programs that they worked on in Nazi Germany. And you've never heard about this because you're not supposed to. 10,000 Nazi war criminals transported to South America along the, by the rat line, CIA, MI-16, and of course, certainly Klaus Barbie and Eichmann and Dr. Mengele and Martin Bormann, and 10,000 of the most ruthless Nazis, and your government, CIA, put them down there and protected them. Why? Because they were all part of the same occult world movement. And until you understand that the Nazi movement was founded in the occult, that the intelligence agencies, a contingent in them, works in the occult, and those occult influences permeate every aspect of our society today, you can't understand anything that's going on, and you can't make sense out of what's going on in this country, what's going on in the Middle East, or what really is happening as far as what the future holds. Well, that is the background, Dr. Colin Ross. Thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this whole incredible story?
Well, I'm a psychiatrist and Canadian by birth and training. I did medical school in Canada from 77 to 81 and my psychiatry training from 81 to 85. And then I was in Winnipeg, an academic professor of psychiatry. Got very interested in trauma, dissociative disorders, multiple personality. And really knew absolutely nothing about CIA, military, mind control, cults, anything like that. Moved down to Dallas in 91, working in a trauma program specializing in people with multiple personality. And started hearing stories about, you know, when I was a kid, I was living near a military base, or my dad was in the military, or my dad was a military contractor.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with this incredible story of Dr. Ross's book, The CIA Doctors. Well, I'm going to let you go ahead and pick up the story from there.
Okay. Well, I started hearing stories from the people I was working with clinically in my treatment program about when they were kids, meaning 5 to 15, they were taken into hospitals and onto secure locations and military bases, and all kinds of really strange experiments were run on them, given LSD, experiments where they would wear special goggles that would distort their vision, being spun around on special platforms, sensory deprivation, isolation, hypnosis, all for the purpose of creating multiple personality. So they would have these new identities, alter personalities, created in the experiments and then given names by the doctors. And I thought, well, that's a little different from anything I ever heard of before.
I mean, it really sounded like this, sort of like paranoia, didn't it?
Yeah, you could easily go, well, they're mentally ill, it's all just crazy delusional stuff, forget it. But what I decided to do was to look into it. And looking into it meant starting to read what was available on CIA military mind control. And then going down to a CIA reading room in when I was down in the Washington, D.C. area for a meeting. And they wheeled out about 15,000 pages of documents that had all been declassified back in the 70s, having to do with MKUltra and other mind control programs. I sifted through those and then ordered a bunch of them, and then in the end I decided I'll just order the whole works. And then I read the available books, and then I started going to the medical school library and photocopying papers from journals in the library from the 50s, 60s, into the 70s, and just built up this elaborate network of documents concerning all these really insane, destructive, crazy experiments that were done. And discovered, really, and I can prove it, like, totally with the documents, that the massive violations of human rights were perpetrated at the leading medical schools in the country systematically for the whole second half of the 20th century.
And, of course, it's so difficult for people to imagine that this would be done at our medical schools by American doctors. But what people have forgotten, these people were on the payroll of the Central Intelligence Agency, and these people have a different worldview, and they saw nothing wrong with what they were doing. And did you ever see that that program called Pretender that was...
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Well, that was sort of a takeoff on what was really going on, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's that kind of stuff happening in reality. And there's just endless examples of things that are, in one sense, secret, but the crazy thing is a lot of it was published in the mainstream medical literature.
Hold that. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Dr. Colin Ross, who's a psychiatrist. And Dr. Ross really started this on his own. He heard all of these stories from young people about the macabre experiments and the things that were done to create in them dissociative personalities, which is a multiple personality disorder. And initially I think he discounted it, but after all he became intrigued enough and he began to study the information, and eventually was able to get hold of 18,000 pages of declassified documents. And so much of this is actually in the mainstream medical literature. They, as bizarre it may seem, many of the experiments were done to create mental disease in our own medical schools, or certainly in some of them were done up in Canada by you know, leading physicians who were on the payroll of the CIA. So you pick up the story there.
Yeah, that's the thing. It wasn't just like some crackpot mad scientist in a basement somewhere. We're talking about Yale, Harvard, UCLA, Princeton, Stanford, Johns Hopkins, and we're talking about people who had their obituaries in the American Journal of Psychiatry, presidents of the American Psychiatric Association, editors of the leading psychiatry journals, a whole network of people who are not fringe marginal people at all, involved for decades in CIA contracting with top secret clearance, knowing perfectly well what it was all about. And the kind of activities included at Yale, a neurosurgeon named Jose Delgado, funded by the Office of Naval Research, was putting brain electrodes in children as young as 11 years old and stimulating their electrodes with a remote transmitter box, and then publishing in books photographs of them and case descriptions where the person would be staring blankly off into space, pounding on the wall, or the just kind of gone tranced out, depending on which button he was pushing on the transmitter box. All of this done for absolutely no therapeutic purpose, completely against all medical ethics, and published in mainstream medical journals.
Yeah, and Chris, where was the outcry from the physicians? This is what really has always bothered me. Why aren't the good physicians speaking out?
I think it's just, well, basically, I don't know. But I think it's just sort of incredulity that it could really be real and going on. Not wanting to, you know, damage your career or get into any political hot water. So just a lot of basically being chicken and conformist is what it boils down to.
It's sort of like what happened over in Hitler's Germany, where nobody really wanted to speak out. It's better to go with the flow than really to object to what was happening in the death camps.
Basically, yeah.
Well, now, well, then how did you begin to develop a practice in people with dissociative personalities, and how frequent is this this clinical entity of the multiple personality or dissociative personality? I don't know what you even call it now. Maybe you could explain this to our listeners, because these are diseases that have been intentionally created. Your tax dollars at work, of course.
Yeah, one of the reasons it's outrageous and unethical is, if you look in the official diagnostic manual of the American Psychiatric Association, you'll see schizophrenia and substance abuse and panic disorder and all the different diagnoses that psychiatrists diagnose, treat, do research on, try to understand. So those are all disorders, and they're bad things to have, and the idea is that you need treatment so you don't have the disorder anymore. But in the MK Ultra, Bluebird, Artichoke, these other programs, psychiatrists who had at least pretending they were following the Hippocratic Oath were deliberately creating psychiatric disorders for the state. It's a complete violation of all medical ethics, just basic human decency. And it went on, like I said, at the major medical schools, and contractors were top people in psychiatry. And one of the there's many, many, many strange wrinkles on the story, but multiple personality disorder, which is now officially called dissociative identity disorder, same basic thing. It's like Sybil, Three Faces of Eve. It's probably the most marginalized psychiatric diagnosis, the one that people don't believe in, that they never see clinically, and they think it's extremely rare. This is psychiatrists. And there's an organization that was formed that was really the lead organization for saying it's all bogus, it's just a bunch of hysterical patients and hysterical therapists cooking it up out of nowhere. It's extremely rare. If you see a case, it's not likely to be real.
Was that the one that Jolly West was involved with?
Yeah. Two of the people on the board of this organization were top secret cleared contractors in the Manchurian Candidate programs who were creating this multiple personality disorder.
And of course, for those who don't know, Jolly West is one of the more famous CIA mind control specialists. In fact, he and we have this from a number of people, he was seeing a man in prison on death row on a number of occasions, a man named Timothy McVeigh. And we have this from people who knew Timothy very well. He didn't like Jolly West, but Jolly West was down there visiting him, and you have to ask yourself, why? Why was the CIA so interested in Timothy McVeigh, and why is this never mentioned? Well, anyway, what was the name of that organization? Because basically it was the False Memory Syndrome, wasn't it?
Yeah, False Memory Syndrome Foundation.
Right. And basically the purpose of that was to poo-poo and belittle anybody who believed, you know, in these people with the false memories about ritual abuse and these other things having taken place.
Right. So it was basically a disinformation program run by CIA contractors who were themselves involved in the Manchurian Candidate programs. Like Martin Orne, who's one of these people, was one of the basically handful of leading hypnosis experts of the whole 20th century. And very well known in the literature, edited of one of the leading journals. And he's really the guy who spearheaded, as a hypnosis expert, spearheaded getting many states to adopt legislation saying that if you had been hypnotized, then none of your testimony was admissible in court. Which is really not consistent with the science at all. The science is very clear that if you hypnotize somebody, you'll get an increase in memories, and you'll get an increase in true memories and an increase in inaccurate memories. But the ratio of accurate to inaccurate memories is the same as with just normal recollection. So you get a total greater number of memories, but you'll get a mixture of increased accurate memories and increased inaccurate memories. But the error rate is the same as for just general recollection.
Well, now, of course, you eventually begin to attract a certain number of these people with dissociative personalities to your practice because, after all, most psychiatrists didn't feel comfortable. They had no idea anything about the experiments that had been done. So you eventually began to see some of these patients. Was there any sort of consistency in their story? Were these victims of family abuse, or were these victims of CIA abuse, or were there any satanic cults there? What was the background behind?
Well, most people with multiple personality describe, if you could call it regular incest inside the family. And physical abuse, sexual abuse, family violence, chaos. You never meet somebody with multiple personality clinically who had like a normal, healthy childhood.
Well, do any of these people talk about a satanic ritual abuse, or is it mostly just family abuse?
No, I've heard many, 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 many people describe a background of either government mind control, satanic cult abuse, or a mixture of the two. Now, the problem is, of course, trying to prove that it's real. You can't prove that it's not real, and you can't just phone up somebody and ask for proof of satanic cult activity. Pretty hard to do. So when you're working with people clinically, you have to figure out a way of working where what you're doing in therapy, the tasks, the strategies, the goals, don't depend on deciding it's real or deciding it's not real. So in terms of doing therapy, you don't have to have really an opinion as to whether the memories are real or not real.
Well, do you think that most of them are real? Would you say that most of them really are real?
I don't really have a number that I'm going to put on it, percentage real, percentage not real.
All right. I'm not trying to put you in a box or put you in a difficult position. I'm certainly interested in learning about this. How many of them, you know, give a story that you know, they were victims of CIA mind control?
Again, I've met satanic cult stories I've heard from hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, okay.
Satanic, it would be hundreds to up possibly 1,000 in that ballpark. The government mind control would be dozens to a few hundred.
All right, and then what about the family?
Family, thousands.
Thousands of family. And these are sexual abuse, or are these physical abuse? Or
all of the above.
All
sexual
of the above.
Abuse, physical abuse, family violence.
And now, how does this manifest itself as far as the patient is concerned? In other words, do they simply develop another personality because they can't face what they've been through?
Basically, yeah, this is just too much. I'm out of here. Somebody else can deal with this. And it's just like imaginary companions, basically, except the imaginary companions become so vivid and so real that they become like separate people. They're not literally separate people. I always, when I'm talking in group and explaining this to people who have multiple personality, I always say, if we took an x-ray of your head, we wouldn't see a whole bunch of little skeletons in there running around. So there's not literally separate people in there, but it sure is psychologically real.
Can these people be helped? Can these people be straightened out?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've got lots of published research data with numbers and statistics in it. I've got lots of case examples of that.
All right, fine. So these are people who can be turned to productive lives. And our guest this evening is Dr. Colin Ross, and we're talking about the dissociative personality that has been produced as a result of satanic abuse, CIA mind control abuse, family abuse, and of course, where does one stop and the other begin? Could these things be real? I believe they are. We'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Colin Ross. Well, Dr. Stan here, and our guest is Dr. Colin Ross. In fact, I recently saw him on, I forgot whether it was Discovery Channel or History Channel. One of those, it was certainly a...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
CIA documents, which you will never hear. However, we just happen to have them on a CD. You can get that through Radio Liberty as well. You can get that CD document, the CD with the 18,000 declassified CIA documents. They were all ordered destroyed. I'm sure glad the CIA isn't very efficient, aren't you?
Yeah, I have personal experience with that, actually. When I went to the CIA reading room, basically you have to apply through the Freedom of Information Act, and then they say, okay, on this date you can come down to our reading room and look at these documents, all of which were declassified years previously. And so I showed up on the at the address in Arlington, Virginia, very nondescript building with no address on the front at all. Get dropped off by the taxi driver and step inside, and all of a sudden I'm in a space that's full of military people in uniform. There's a sign on the wall saying secure phones, CIA and DIA only. I go check in. I have to wait for a while. The CIA woman comes downstairs. We go up in the elevator. Me, the CIA woman, who was very polite and pleasant, and a whole bunch of uniformed military people. We get off on the fifth floor, or seventh floor, whichever it was, and she leads me down the hallway, and we knock on this door, and she has a keypad and a code. So we go through this very thick, reinforced door into secure space, and I have to sign in because I'm now in secure space. The woman there is, again, very pleasant, and I sign in, show my identification and so on. Then we go through another door into a second secure space where I'm sat down, and the woman goes out, and a few minutes later comes back with all the declassified documents in 149 different files. And I sit there all day going through them and deciding which ones I want to order, eventually deciding I want to order all of them. And sitting with me the whole day is a woman who's about 85 years old or so. And that's because I'm not allowed to be alone with these documents, which are all public domain declassified at this point. And so about halfway through the day, she says, well, I have to go to the restroom now. So what she does is she gets up in the room that I'm sitting in, goes to the door, which is open, back into the hallway where we came in from the elevator. So I've gone into secure space to read these documents, but I'm now in a room where a door is open back into the hallway that's not secure space. She wants to go to the restroom, so she looks out the door and asks two black guys who are doing reconstruction work in the hallway if they'd mind watching me for a minute. And they look at me and kind of chuckle and go, oh, I think we can handle this guy. He doesn't look too bad. She goes to the restroom, and I'm being watched by two black guys who are in there doing construction work. But I had to go through this whole procedure of checking into this highly secured space in order to be able to look at these documents.
Well, I think originally they were all supposed to be destroyed. Fortunately, they were not. And then, of course, there were the Church Committee hearings. We do have a copy of the Church Committee hearings, too. They did not want the information to come out. They did not want the American people to know that they're experimenting in many instances on children and adults and giving them one fellow actually from the CIA. Just as a lark, they gave him a LSD, a dose of it. He went and jumped out the window after right. distorting and frying his mind.
Well, Frank Olson, yeah.
Right, and you know, the people who are in this seem to have no conscience. This is what seems to bother me so much.
Well, there's an example. It wasn't just mind control stuff. It was chemical weapons, biological weapons, a whole range of different things. So there's in one of the top medical journals in the world is The Lancet.
Right.
And so in The Lancet, there's a bunch of debate back and forth between different writers saying, well, maybe this behavior was ethical, maybe it wasn't, and there's this point of view and that point of view. What they were discussing was an article that was published in there where at the bottom of the front page of the article it says funded by the U.S. Department of the Army. And what they were doing was putting plutonium in the cereal of mentally retarded children in an institution to study how plutonium is metabolized or dealt with by the body. And the parents of the children were told, while they were giving informed consent, were told that it was nutritional research and what the children were being given was a nutritional supplement.
Plutonium, all right.
Yes.
A deadly poison.
And whether this was ethical or not was debated in a leading medical journal.
Well, of course, the same thing with Tuskegee. We're having Peter Buxton on later this week. He was the fellow who blew this study on Tuskegee.
Yeah, without him, it would have stayed covered forever.
And, of course, they had 11, I think 11 doctors. 10 of them said, there's nothing wrong with this. It's done in the name of science. It's
right.
done in the name of science. They were killing blacks.
Yeah. It was completely wrong.
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dr. Colin Ross, and we're talking about already the macabre experiments that have been done in, through the years by our government on American citizens. But we have to cover this up. We really can't let the American people understand that many of our leading scientists see nothing wrong with experimenting on people, and even in some instances, you know, destroying their minds. In fact, that story, perhaps we could just briefly touch on it. Was it Dr. Cameron up in Canada, one of the leading psychiatrists, who destroyed this woman's mind?
Yeah, I interviewed one of the victims of that line of experiments. It was funded, first of all, by the CIA, but then when the CIA pulled out funding was taken over by Canada's Department of Health and Welfare. And so Ewan Cameron was one of the very top guys in psychiatry. He was president of World Psychiatric Association, which he co-founded with William Sargent, who was a top mind control brainwashing expert in England. He published his research and his experiments in mainstream medical journals, and had top secret clearance with the CIA to wipe out people's memories, which he did with massive, massive amounts of electric shock, like 100 treatments over a period of a couple months.
These were for people who didn't need them at all. It was just an experiment on people who didn't know they were being experimented on.
The woman I interviewed was referred to Ewan Cameron by her family doctor for depression after delivery of a child. She was just going for treatment for depression. That's it. And she had her memory completely wiped out, permanently wiped out, with 102 shock treatments. In each of those shock treatments, 6 times the normal amount of electricity was delivered to her brain. And the purpose of this, obviously the CIA wasn't interested in therapy, the purpose of it was to figure out how intelligence agencies could wipe out people's memories using shock.
And, of course, was anything ever done? Is Cameron ever cited for this?
He died before it all came out and so on. What ended up happening was six or seven people had a class action suit against the CIA that was settled out of court. And then the woman I interviewed, Linda McDonald, got a lawyer because her experiments were after the CIA money dropped out. She got a lawyer and filed suit against the Canadian government, and they established a fund and a 1-800 number where if you were a victim of one of these experiments, you got $100,000 tax-free automatically.
Oh, isn't that nice, you know? But who's ever punished for these things? That's what I want to know.
Nobody.
Hold that
thought. No individual psychiatrist has ever been punished.
We'll be back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Dr. Colin Ross, and certainly we've just been talking about the macabre experiments as Ewan Cameron, head of the psychiatric, I think, American Psychiatric Association, or Canadian Psychiatric, was it American or Canadian?
Both. American, Canadian, and world.
This is the top psychiatrist who's doing these CIA experiments, trying to see how difficult it would be to destroy a person's memory. To destroy, of course, he gave this one poor woman, you know, well over 100 electroshock treatments in just a few weeks, with 6 times the dose he should have, and totally destroyed her memory. She didn't know who she was, she didn't know her family, but nothing is ever done. Oh, eventually when they came out, why they gave him all $100,000 and said, oh, isn't that terrible? It sort of reminds me that this last week when Robert Mueller, the FBI, head of the FBI, said, oh, yes, we've made some mistakes. We've done a lot of things getting records on people we never should have. Shucks, we're so incompetent, but nobody's ever punished. And nobody, I mean, these are many of our major psychiatrists in the world, have never been punished for the inhumane, Nazi-like treatment of the...
It's not a matter of mistakes. It's programmatic, it's on purpose, and it clearly violates all the major codes of ethical conduct, going literally back to ancient Rome.
Amen to that. Well, before we go on, Dr., let's go ahead and get any information you'd like to get out. Do you have a website? Do you have any material you'd like to talk about that you'd like to think that people might want to get?
Well, my website, my company is called the Ross Institute, and it contracts with hospitals to provide treatment and clinical service and education and so on. The webpage is short for the Ross Institute, www.ross, rossinst.com, rossinst. And you can find my books, all my books there, or you can find all my books on Amazon.com.
All right, fine. What are the books that we carry, the Dotsie Doctors? What are the books do you have that maybe we should be carrying?
Well, those are the ones that interest you the most, the CIA doctors. I have a lot of other books on treatment models, and but they're more kind of mental health-oriented, a little more technical, most of them.
Well, now, are you taking private cases, or are you primarily just...
I don't personally, but I have people that I work with and people I refer to.
All right, fine. So that you're more or less in administration at the present time?
I do about five, six hours a week of group psychotherapy in programs in L.A., Michigan, and Dallas every week. The ones in L.A., because I live in Dallas, so the ones in L.A. and Grand Rapids I do by video conference link. And then I do consultations on a regular basis. So I kind of have my hand in on direct clinical work and on consultation, but I'm mostly writing, teaching, lecturing, research.
Well, is there a lot of interest in this in psychiatry today? In other words, are other psychiatrists interested in learning more about this?
Handful.
Only a handful. In fact, I know, because I've talked to some psychiatrists about it, and they sort of poo-poo this, oh, you know, that's that old black helicopter, you know, a conspiracy and a commie under every bed approach. You know, they just cannot believe that this sort of thing could go on.
Right. The thing is, it's not conspiracy theory. It's not one guy's point of view. It's absolutely documented facts. Thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly documented in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of material from the CIA and publications that you can find in the mainstream medical school library, which is where I found them all.
Well, our telephone number, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question for our guest this evening, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, at 464-8295. And Dr. Colin Ross is certainly a very ethical and well-informed psychiatrist who's dedicated a good part of his life to trying to get the truth out about these things that really do go on. This is not imaginary. And many of these people with these dissociative personality disorders, victims of satanic ritual abuse, familial ritual abuse, and CIA ritual abuse, and in the process, of course, of trauma. This is really trauma-based programming, why, of course, eventually, what happens, it is so horrible. It is so unbearable. It is so frightening that the people simply, their mind clicks over and they develop another personality, and they're the ones who have to deal with it. They don't. Would that be a fair appraisal?
Yeah, it's basically a kind of divide and conquer strategy. One unified person can't cope with this, so we'll just imagine there's a whole bunch of us. We can all take care of bits and pieces of it.
Well, they're really, of course, we hear some of these stories about Sybil and the others. Are basically some of these, is there usually more than two?
Well, the median number, which means like the middle number of personalities, if you add all the cases together, is about six or seven or eight in that kind of general range.
Really?
But if you figure that J.R. Tolkien sat down and imagined the entire world of The Lord of the Rings, you can have any number of characters in your internal landscape and all kinds of adventures and conflicts between them all. But the number of parts that actually come out, take control of your body, and participate in directly in life, can't be 20,000 because there's not enough time in one life. So you can have any number of characters and figures in the internal world. But there's usually just kind of a handful, five, six, seven, eight, who really are directly responsible for large chunks of life.
And then, of course, eventually down the line, why you can get all the others to disappear and the people can come back to facing reality as it really is?
Yeah, it's basically the process is called integration. So it's not about getting rid of parts. It's more like there's short circuits on the motherboard, and you've got to get all the short circuits repaired so you've got free flow of information all around the system. And then the parts all kind of blend together and function as a regular unified person would do.
All right. Well, do you mind taking me some calls? We've got
several people
calling in. We've got we've got Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Mike, do you have a question?
Yeah. First, I'd like to say thank you, Dr. Ross, for coming on and talking to us tonight.
You're most welcome.
Yeah, and I read your book, The Blue Bird.
Oh, good.
And I had to take note of the number of times the Scottish Rite funded different nefarious activities. I think you make note of 7 or 8 instances of that. And I wonder if you could elaborate just a bit.
Well, first of all, that's just part of the documentation. That's a fact. That the funding wasn't just by the CIA or just by the Army or just by the Air Force. The Public Health Service was involved. So there's a lot of funding sources that overlapped or separate from each other to some degree. But one of the funding sources that's part of the story over and over and over is the Scottish Rite Foundation was funding a lot of LSD research, mind control research in prisons. And so you'll see a CIA contractor funded under MK Search or MK Ultra who also has, at the same time, money from the Scottish Rite Foundation. And so then now we're going to jump from facts to conspiracy theory here. So that's just a documented fact, that the Scottish Rite Foundation was funding a lot of the same people. And these people were in a pretty small, tight network of doctors who all knew each other. But when we take the jump to conspiracy theory now, and I call it conspiracy theory because now I can't prove it, I don't think this was just random or coincidental. I think the Masons have been structurally, organizationally involved in this story. Exactly how to what degree, I don't know.
Okay, fine. Anything else? What
would their interest be? They must have had a personal interest in some particular research.
Well, it's all just part of the agenda of controlling the world.
Okay, I think that's
the worldview dominate.
Yeah, I think that's anything else you want to say, Mike?
Yeah, I wanted to ask if you know anything about you go up one level from the Scottish Rite to the Shriners, and what in the world are they doing with their children's hospitals?
I don't have any facts about that.
And I'll tell you what, I know as an orthopedic surgeon working in those hospitals, they did awfully, awfully good work on the children from from the orthopedic point of view. And
I'm sure they do.
And for the burn point of view. So, I mean, the thing is that there is a dualism here, and some of it's good, some of it's bad. Hey, thanks very much.
Okay, thanks.
And let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jack, do you have a question on this subject?
Yes, I do. A quick comment too on the last caller. It sounds like there's always a plausible cover story behind which they conduct their nefarious activities. In my research in the library, I discovered an Omni magazine January 1983 article of a lady doctor, Margaret Patterson from Scotland, who discovered in doing surgery using anesthesia, as they did in their Hong Kong hospitals instead of anesthesia drugs, that drug addicts' cravings and then ultimately their entire addiction would be corrected using electroacupuncture. And as the story relates, she discovered in her colleagues that there's a precise neurochemical balance in the brain, and I'm wondering if these technologies, if you want to call it that, that the intelligence community utilized, if it didn't precisely affect neurochemical balance, and perhaps the solution to all of these various mental so-called disorders are really secondary to that, and could be restored rather quickly, as that article points out.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Dr. Ross?
Well, this is all so incredibly complicated. I mean, basically, you can't have anything going on in your mind without something going on in your brain simultaneously. And whenever there's something big going on in your brain, chemicals and neurotransmitters are involved somehow. So you can basically be guaranteed that if there's anything, happiness, excitement, sleep, pain, being mind controlled, all of having mental illnesses, having addictions, all this has to involve brain chemistry somehow.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things we just don't understand, Jack. But thanks very much. Did you have a specific question? That was it. Okay, yeah, Jack, thanks. Let's go to David. He's calling in from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And once again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Good evening, David. How are you?
Good evening, sir. Thank you so very much, as usual. I find it fascinating, and I very much appreciate your guest. You should be aware that it continues to this very day, trying to recover from cancer treatment and all the cut and burn that you mentioned so often, and I tried to avoid it, but I was just too weak. Nonetheless, I got assigned to an assisted living facility, a state facility, to ostensibly be helped in my recovery. Having moved physically in myself with my property, come to find out 2 days later that I had to definitely participate in this program for psychiatric review by virtue and dint of a aide that ran the facility. And when it was reported to the group that supposedly stands for the aged rights of civilian citizens, they just left it off, and it just doesn't matter. You could report abuse, and this I felt was sincerely due to my political point of view and my feeling that you know, there were things that were going on that needed to be addressed and looked at in a frank and clear manner.
They threatened
to put me out of the house lest I participate in the program. And do you know, I was foolish enough to bite, and you know, I still got put out of the house.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much, David.
Thanks so much.
Okay, that was David calling from Coeur d'Alene. Anyway, of course, we're talking with Dr. Colin Ross. We're talking about these macabre programs that have gone on by the CIA, and nobody's ever called to task. And there is this these records. In fact, as we mentioned earlier, there are 18,000 pages, and we actually have on a CD these 18,000 pages of government documents that you can get through Radio Liberty. You can also get Dr. Colin Ross's book called, and now it's called upon the CIA doctors, but originally it was called Operation Bluebird, just Bluebird as I remember.
Mm-hmm.
But there were all these CIA programs. Bluebird was one of them, Artichoke, MK Ultra, and these were all different macabre experiments they were doing with our tax money, trying to find out how to really destroy people's minds. This is what's so frightening.
Yeah, they were,
or at least control them,
literally destroying people's minds and killing people. And doing all kinds of experiments on unwitting civilians, terminal cancer patients, imprisoned sex offenders, imprisoned drug addicts. It was just absolutely outrageous. And all stuff that you would think would be impossible, but it's not impossible. It's documented fact.
And, of course, the trouble is, you know, from my point of view, I think that the average individual finds it incomprehensible that to believe it could happen in America. And yet, this is what happened in Hitler's Germany. And these Germans were good people. They, you know, they certainly, you know, enjoyed the things that we do. And these were educated, well-educated people. They just saw nothing wrong with experimenting on other human beings. And, you know, if it killed them, that was too bad, because they did not really have this sense of right and wrong. It's almost like they had no conscience.
I agree.
Do you think these things are still going on? Do we have any way of knowing?
It's completely unbelievable that they're not. All the declassification of documents stops in 72-73. There's some declassified information in sources like U.S. News and World Report about non-lethal weapons experiments and weapons development going on right up to the present. And these are weapons of different kinds of energy beams that are beamed at people's heads to knock them out, disable them, control their behavior, alter their mental state. And since LSD, viruses, bacteria, and radiation have all been tested on unwitting civilians, it's basically guaranteed that these non-lethal weapons are being tested on civilians, too.
And, of course, the thing is that they want to be able to control our minds. This is the thing. I think it's so vitally important that we understand that there are people who want to be able to control the populace, and whatever it takes to do it, they're going to develop it with the unlimited funds that they have. They're doing the experiments. They're always able to get the psychiatrists or psychologists to do the experiments. They're well paid. But, of course, one day I believe that if they do not stand before the bar of justice in this country and this lifetime, they will stand before the bar of justice in the next. Well, I will be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Dr. Ross, we have 3 minutes. It's been a fascinating hour, and I always enjoy our conversations. I like to get you back on from time to time, because I never want people to forget the history. And it's so easy to put this out of our minds, because we don't like to think about these things going on. In fact, have you ever
right into terrorism and 9/11 and the Oklahoma City bombing and all kinds of things that are going on currently? This is not just ancient history.
Did you ever stop and wonder if you might have been better off never learning all the things that you've learned?
I'd be better off if none of it ever happened. But I'm glad I know about it. I'm not happy about it. But I'm glad that I know about this stuff, and I've assigned myself the task of trying to talk about it in public and get some light thrown on it.
And, of course, you said that really it's not very widely accepted in psychiatry. Is there perhaps a growing number of psychiatrists, at least a small growing number of psychiatrists, who are at least willing to examine the evidence and look into it?
Not that I see. I think it'd just be the same 1 in 1,000 maximum that it's been for the last 50 years.
And of course, then you give lectures to the psychiatrists, or to at least those psychiatrists who are really being interested in learning?
Psychiatrists basically don't come to my workshops. It's all master's and PhD level therapists.
Now, what are these? Are these psychologists or what?
Yeah, psychologists and social workers and therapists. Psychiatrists don't really come to listen to what I have to say very much.
Well, I think that we all have we have blinders on, and I know certainly within orthopedics. I mean, orthopedics is a wonderful, very mechanical type of a structure, you know, and things are pretty well laid out, but there are certain differences of opinion, and there are certain opinions that doctors hold that are just not right.
It was the same thing with ulcers. I mean, it was such a dogma in medicine that ulcers are caused by too much acid and you have to take antacids. There was huge opposition to the discovery that 90% of ulcers are caused by bacteria that can be treated with an antibiotic. I mean, the acid people in medicine fought that and fought that and fought that.
Well, eventually, though, they had to give in, and let's hope that one day they will come to realize that you were right and that they were wrong. But it's not a matter of right and wrong. It's really all about what's good for the patient.
Exactly.
Amen. Well, our guest has been Dr. Coles Ross. Thank you so much for being with us, and I hope we can call on you again one of these days.
I'd enjoy that. Thank you.
Good night. God bless.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, that was Dr. Colin Ross. I hope you enjoyed the program. Certainly, it's a different approach, but it's a very important thing for you to know. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest this evening, Dr. Colin Ross, his book, The CIA Doctors. And then, of course, there is the CD, a CD-ROM that has all the 18,000 pages of suppressed CIA files, and they are available through Radio Liberty. We carry books on mind control and mass control. We actually have the report from the Church Committee, and if you're interested in knowing more about any of these, well, you can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We actually, of course, have a 4-tape set. Interviews with people on mind control. You'll hear the interviews with with Kathy O'Brien, who was a victim of this. And just like that television program, The Pretender, where they kidnapped this boy and put him into the program. And, of course, they were able to really increase his acuity, his thought process, and so he could pretend to be anybody. Although it sounded incredible, it was really based on fact. And there really are bizarre people in our government who have a different world agenda. Now, we also have a great four tape set on the Tuskegee study, because this is very similar. Later this week, we're going to have Peter Buxton on, who blew the whistle on the Tuskegee study, an experiment on over 400 black men that was designed to kill them. Designed to kill them. And by the time they got around to stopping it, there were only 57 of the 400 black men who were still alive. They wanted them to die so they could autopsy them. And as incredible as it may seem, this was backed by physicians all across America. The information was in medical journals. And people accepted it in the name of science. Exactly as so many of the bizarre experiments that went on in Nazi Germany were accepted in the name of science. Because the same spiritual forces that influenced the Nazi mentality are alive and well in America today. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And perhaps to understand them better, really you need to see Constance Cumby's video. We just looked at it last night. We have it in DVD form now, and as well as in video. It's a talk she gave at our last conference. And she talks about how this Nazi movement, and she uses this term, it's a resurgence of Nazism and the Nazi mentality in America. And, of course, it's a fascinating hour. We watched it, and I've heard the story before, but it's very well done. Anyway, that's Constance Cumby. The DVD, the video, we have a four-tape set, and of course, we have her book, the Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. So if you're interested in knowing more, our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, RadioLiberty.com, where, of course, you can listen to our program on the Internet 3 hours a day. You can link to our archives. You can link to our MP3s, and we hope that you will. We hope you'll tell other people about our program. You're going to hear things here at Radio Liberty you're not going to hear elsewhere. You see, we're pretty involved in a struggle for the mind of the American people. And so many of the television programs we see have all these scenes of violence and blood and horror and gore. And, you take it as sort of a matter of a commonplace. If you watch certain of these, you go into the autopsy rooms, you see all these bodies there, and the brains laid out, and the lungs laid out, and very good, accurate descriptions of what dead bodies look like. And pretty soon, you get so callous and indifferent, it doesn't shock you anymore. For example, Alexander Pope wrote, you know, vice is a monster of such horrible mien, as to be hated is but to be seen. But seen too oft, too familiar with the face, we first endure and then tolerate and then embrace. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, because if this country doesn't return to our Christian heritage, we're going to lose it. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, for this next hour, we're going to have Brad Friedman with us. Brad is one of those people who has, for some reason, unknown probably to him, but he's been drawn into actually compiling information on the voter fraud that we have in America. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you go to the polls every 2 or 4 years to vote for the candidate of their choice, and then they many times rig the elections. And certainly there's no question at all, if you look at the exit polls in Ohio, that John Kerry won the election, just exactly as, of course, the former Vice President of the United States, Al Gore, won the 2000 election. But the thing is, the American people have to have the idea that we're going to be able to change the direction of our country by going to the polls and voting. It's all a mirage. And until we get back to paper ballots, with a counted and with a paper trail, we're not going to be able to retake our country. So you have to understand that, I mean, there was so much voter fraud in the last election, and why didn't John Kerry, who had lots of money in his campaign, challenge what happened in Ohio? Why, very simply, because he came from the same skull and bone secret society that George Bush did, and it was all decided ahead of time that George Bush was going to win, and he was going to discredit Christianity, he was going to discredit our country, he was going to discredit the Republican Party, and he's doing all of those very, very well. You have to understand that there are people behind everything that's going on. We have to have free and open elections, and Brad, for one reason or another, has taken this upon himself. He puts out certainly information almost on a daily basis. Hardly a day goes by I don't get something from Brad Friedman telling me about one or another aspect of this story. Brad, thank you so very much for being with us again tonight.
It's always great to be here. Stan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Well, tell us what's happening. There are lots of things. I understand that actually there are some people, even some of the Democrats, who are very concerned about the fraudulent electronic voting machines.
Oh, well, quite a few of them are concerned about it in actuality. And before I get into that, let me correct you on just one point. You talked about voter fraud and the problem that we have with voter fraud. To be frank, the problem that we have in this country is not with voter fraud. The voters are doing just fine. The problem is with election fraud, meaning the machines themselves, the way we count those ballots and so forth. We don't have an epidemic in this country, despite, frankly, what a lot of folks out there think and what a lot of folks are trying to make people think, that there's an epidemic of, you know, people voting twice or non-citizens voting and so forth. That would be voter fraud. What we have a problem with in this country is actually counting the votes that we do have, counting them correctly, counting them transparently so that folks have confidence that they have been counted accurately. We've seen problem after problem in election after election around this country, and the problem is getting worse, not better, since 2006. And that's the concern that we have. So we now have Democrats in power. They're in Congress, and in fact, there had been a number of bills from the Democrats in the previous session that they were trying to get passed through Congress, and only now will they finally be able to get something passed. The question is, how good will that bill be?
And, of course, the other thing I'm interested in, what about here in California? Well, the Secretary of State, the new Secretary of State, the Democratic Secretary of State, do what the Republican Secretary of State wouldn't, and that's get rid of those electronic voting machines that fix elections. We'll be right back. Brad, go ahead, Brad. Pick up the story there.
All right. Well, we've got a couple of different situations. One you mentioned out here in California, and one going on at the federal level right now. And currently at the federal level, the leading election reform bill, and it's quite comprehensive and quite good in many ways, it has been put forward by Congressman Rush Holt from New Jersey. It's got a lot of very much needed protections in it, protections against internet connections and networks and a bunch of things that have really been needed. And I should say out front that I worked with the office throughout the drafting process on that bill and was able to get a lot of important stuff added to it that I strongly support. That said, what the bill does not do, and the reason for the moment I cannot endorse the bill, is because it does not ban touchscreen DRE, it's called direct recording electronic, DRE touchscreen voting. It needs to be banned, period, because these touchscreen machines that we're now using all around the country have been found to be inaccurate, have been found to be hackable, and frankly, the thing that really concerns me right off the bat is when these touchscreen voting machines, when they break down, and they do all the time, voters are unable to cast a vote. Never mind who it's going to be counted for, they can't even vote. And we saw that happen all across the country throughout 2006, and where thousands, if not millions, of legally registered voters were not allowed to cast a vote. So, first step, we must get rid of these DRE touchscreen voting machines. And currently, the Rush Holt election reform bill does not ban them. In fact, it will, in fact, institutionalize them for years to come. That's a big battle right now, and I find myself in a locked battle with the Democrats and with some of their public advocacy group supporters, like People for the American Way and Move On and Common Cause. They're supporting this bill despite the fact that they know that it does not ban touchscreen voting, and that is the most dangerous thing. If we can ban DRE touchscreen voting, then at least we'll have a paper ballot, as you were talking about. Now, how do you count that paper ballot? Do you do it on an optical scanner where you scan the ballot through a machine and it counts it, or do you count it by hand? Either one of those options, to me, for now, would be acceptable as long as we have checks and balances in place to audit those scanning machines to make sure that they're accurate. And in fact, Holt's bill does build in an audit to those optically scanned ballots. But again, to me,
Right there, Brad. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Brad Friedman. He's talking about a bill that's been submitted to Congress by Congressman Holt that has a lot of good things in it, but of course it still allows the electronic voting machines, and that is what he objects to. And as long as we have the touchscreen electronic voting machines, or they can break down, all sorts of things can happen, they can switch these the votes around, and so he says we've got to get rid of them, and I agree. We've got to get rid of electronic voting. What's wrong with a plain old ballot that you can mark with a pen? I'll tell you what, many times the lines were a lot shorter before they made it simplified and speed things up. I think that government is the only organization in the world that can take a simple problem and make it complicated and sometimes even unworkable.
So, well, they certainly did in this case, and that's exactly the problem. I mean, the lines are now going out the door and around the corner when you've got a voting machine. If you've got four or five of these touchscreen machines and even one of them breaks down in a precinct, your lines get exponentially longer, and people, they'll drive to the polling place, they'll see the line going out, they won't even bother to vote. So this is not helping. This is hurting us a great deal. And with these touchscreen machines, the bottom line really is, even if they include a paper trail, so-called paper trail, as they do out here in California, the dirty little secret that people don't realize is that this paper trail that sort of spins off the side of the machine and you're supposed to be able to verify your ballot, that paper trail doesn't actually ever get counted. They still take the numbers, the totals, from inside those machines. And the problem is, it is impossible for a human being to verify that ballot inside that machine. It cannot be done, unless you're Superman with X-ray vision, and you can read ones and zeros flying through the electrons inside the machine. Other than that, you've got to trust that the machines are going to count your vote accurately. And what you end up with is faith-based voting, and I don't think we should have faith-based voting in this country. I think we should have voting that we can see, that is transparent, that if there's any question about it whatsoever, we can go back to that piece of paper and we can count it again and make sure it's accurate.
You know, one of the things that really bothers me, Brad, is this attitude, well, you know, it just sucks, you know, we just made another mistake. Oh, it sucks, we're so incompetent. Oh, it's those machines' fault, it's not our fault. We're trying to do a better job, but it just never works out. And I don't believe that at all. I believe we're dealing with brilliant people. I think they know exactly what they're doing. I think they're hiding behind this this feigned incompetence. Because, of course, what a better way to control a nation than control the voting process and give the people the impression, the perception that we actually have a democracy or democratic voting or that our votes count, whereas the truth of the matter is they can rig it any way they want to. These people are not stupid. They knew what they were doing when they put in these machines. They know what they're doing now. And the only way they're going to take them out is because the American people have to say, we don't trust you. You have violated the trust of the American people, and if you don't get this out, why, we're going to change our form of government.
Well, that's right. We have to remember that our system was not built on trust. It's built on checks and balances. So there's no reason to trust elections officials or elections or election machines or anything else. We should be able to verify all of these things with our own eyes. Now, let's give the bad guys here the benefit of the doubt for 1 second. Even if you're wrong about whether they're controlling or manipulating these elections or not, even if that's the case, it doesn't much matter, because as long as we cannot prove that it is accurate and correct, and frankly, they know when they use these electronic machines that they cannot, it is impossible to prove that the election is correct. So whether they're gaming the system or not, frankly, doesn't matter, because people like you and me and others who are paying attention have concerns and questions about it. And I would suggest that those concerns and those questions and the confidence that is lost in democracy because of those concerns and questions, I would suggest that that is as much a threat to democracy as anything else. It's as much of a threat to democracy, you know, as if we weren't allowing folks to vote or if we were gaming the elections. We don't know. We need to have confidence. You know, it's been said that a successful election is one in which the loser walks away and doesn't contest it. It says, you know, I lost fair and square. I know that I can see for myself that I didn't get as many votes. And, you know, the country then moves on, and we try to sort of come together after an election. Well, when we're now seeing election after election, that we've got five of them, Stan, that are currently being challenged in Congress still from 2006, when we have those kind of elections, when people have these questions about the machines, it doesn't really matter if they're accurate or not. What matters is we don't believe they are, and that's very dangerous to our political system, I believe.
I think you're absolutely right, Brad. Well, is there any other alternative to the Holt bill back in Congress?
Currently, well, there's some other bills that have been put forward. Hillary Clinton and Tubbs Jones just put one forward, although it is not better. I would say the Holt bill is, frankly, the best thing we've got going, which is why it's so disappointing that it doesn't go that extra mile that it needs to say enough is enough, we're banning these touchscreen machines once and for all. You've got even the governor of Florida, the new Republican governor of Florida, Dr. Stan, of all places, Charlie Crist, has now come out and said he's going to replace all the touchscreen voting machines in the state of Florida with the paper-based optical scan systems. And now when you've got a Republican from Florida ahead of the Democrats on this issue, you know something has gone terribly wrong.
I see. Maybe the Republicans might get a little bit more credibility if they'd come out in favor of that instead of supporting the current corrupt system. And what really disturbed me was here in the state of California where I live, I mean, the Secretary of State was the Republican Secretary of State was supporting these voting machines, and the Democrat candidate running against him in the election was saying, we've got to look into these voting machines, and I think that's why she won and he lost.
No question about it. Bruce McPherson was the fellow's name. Terrible. Just a horrendous Secretary of State. He pretty much allowed any and all voting machines that came forward, that were presented, he went ahead and certified them, incredibly. Now, you got Deborah Bowen, who has been a champion on this stuff, a champion for voting machine security, for transparency, and she's come into office, and I agree that that's why she won, and it was no small feat this year, you know, given the success of Schwarzenegger and everything else, for a Democratic Secretary of State candidate to come in and win. She did, and first thing she did was promise a top-to-bottom review of all of the voting systems that have been certified in the state of California. I've been speaking with her with her and her office for the last few weeks. They are they've got a tall order ahead of them, particularly since they're looking at moving the primaries up now from June of next year up to February. So they've got their work cut out for them to look at these machines, but I know through talking to her and other folks in her office, they are no fans of these touchscreen machines, and frankly, I would be surprised if she didn't come out and decertify all touchscreen voting machines in the state of California. That would send a very good signal to the rest of the country.
Now, does she have the authority to do that?
You bet. She's in charge of, you know, what systems can be certified and you know, can be used and can't be used. And she has, she is installed as her Deputy Secretary of State, in charge of voting systems, a fellow by the name of Lowell Finley. Now, he headed a group called VoterAction.org, and they were responsible for suing in 10 different states to get rid of these touchscreen voting machines. Indeed, they sued out here in California. So the guy in charge of this thing is an absolute bulldog. He knows this stuff cold. He knows the dangers of using touchscreen voting machines. And, you know, for the guy who sued the state to get rid of them, now being in charge, I suspect we're going to see some action there in that regard. And hopefully we'll get rid of these machines. You know, Diebold refers to California as the world's largest voting market, and they're absolutely right. It is. And what happens here and the way the machines must be made for use in California affects the rest of the country. People look to this state to determine, you know, hey, if it's good enough for California, it's good enough for us. Well, the other side is true as well. If it's not good enough for California, then some of these other states are going to give their systems a look. So I look forward to, I don't know for a fact which machine she's going to accept and which she isn't, but as I say, I would be very, very surprised if she didn't put serious limitations on the use of touchscreen DRE voting in California. I certainly hope so.
Well, I hope that she'll accept that, you know, that certainly a lead pencil machine and a paper ballot, because I think that is by far the best way to go.
That's too technical, Dan. I can't understand. The paper, pencil, and a box to count them in, it's just too complicated for me.
Well, now, how about the electrical scanners? You know, of course, the optical scanners that then run these all the way through. Can they be rigged, too, or is
that... Yes, they can. Yep, they can be rigged, and that's been shown, and... in fact, there was a very famous hack test that occurred at the end of 2005 where, in fact, in Florida, Leon County, Florida, where, in fact, a mock election was completely flipped without a trace being left behind when it was run on an optical scan system. But here is the difference. With an optical scan system, you have got a paper ballot that has been marked by the voter, and if there is ever any question, you can go back and you can count those ballots and make sure that the optical scan machine did it correctly.
Well, I think that that's what we really need, and of course we'd be interested in knowing what our listeners think from out across America. So when we get back, we'll take your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. There's so much more to this story. The fate of really what happened to a couple of the Republicans there in Ohio, who, when somebody challenged the voting in one of the and they wanted to do a recount. They've rigged a recount. That's another story we'll get to in just a moment. What was that story about, rigging the recount?
Yes, indeed. In Cuyahoga County, Ohio, which is where Cleveland is, and there were certainly enough votes in Cleveland itself to throw the entire state of Ohio one way or another. Back in 2004, it turns out that, in fact, when a recount was asked for after the election, and it was asked, by the way, the recount was requested by the Green Party and the Libertarian parties together, not by the Democrats, they asked for a recount to find out what actually happened in Ohio. And, in fact, as we were concerned about when it happened, the folks who were doing those recounts were gaming the recount itself. And essentially, state law requires them to count a random 3% of the precincts by hand. And if that hand count of 3% does not match the official count, then they are to count the entire county by hand. Well, it turns out that these several election officials, election workers in Ohio, did not choose that 3% of precincts by random. They pre-selected. They knew which ones they were going to count, and they knew in advance that those precincts were going to match up with the official count. So this has been going through court the past couple of years, and finally we've got a conviction just a month or two ago against two of these elections officials, and it was found, in fact, they committed election fraud, felony, by gaming that recount. The recount in Ohio was fixed.
Why would they bother to do that unless, of course, they knew that the election that put George Bush in the White House had been fixed?
Well, what they claim is that, oh, we didn't want to go through the trouble of doing a full manual recount of the election. Now, mind you, that's their job. You know, they're elections officials. They basically, you know, you hold an election, what, once, twice, every couple of years? That's their job. But they decided to game that system. They claim it was because, oh, we didn't want to have to count the entire county by hand. But again, who knows? Who knows what would have happened had they counted the entire county by hand? That's why you don't game the system, and that's why those guys are facing jail time right now for what they did and the way they gamed our system.
Well, of course, you know, but I thought now that the Libertarians and the Green Party put up the money. If they put up the money, why can't they go ahead and do it anyway? In other words, recount all the votes in that county by hand.
Well, because it took, you know, several years before the prosecutor had a case that they could move forward with, and in fact, you know, they did move forward, they did get the convictions, but to now, well, I suppose they could now make a request to go back and do the count all over again, although frankly, I'm not sure that the ballots are still intact. I don't know what's happened to them. There's been a lot of years where they've had time to mess with those ballots as it is. But boy, yeah, I'd love to see them go back and do that. In the meantime, I know they're scrambling now because they've got a new Secretary of State in Ohio as well. Again, a Democrat has taken over out there, and I've been in touch with her office. Her name is Jennifer Bruner, and again, I'm encouraged out there that things are getting a lot better, because one of the things they did, you know, as soon as they came into office, was they revealed what they had learned, that the previous Secretary of State, J. Kenneth Blackwell, had been apparently shredding documents on his way out the door. And they have now requested a complete investigation by the state auditor out there. So I think we're going to hear more coming out of Ohio and more about what Jay Kenneth
did. Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
You got it.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course Brad Figman has been telling us about what happened in Ohio. It's taken them well over 2 years, you know, to finally, rather than when they were supposed to be doing a recount in this one major county in Ohio, why, because the Republicans, a couple of people that work in the election office, gamed it. Instead of, you know, doing random selection of 3% of the precincts, why, they had took specific precincts. They did not random, and they said, see, everything's all right. Well, apparently somebody blew the whistle on them. It took them 2 years, and eventually they were able to get a conviction. And those people ought to go to prison for the rest of their lives, because Certainly, they, in my estimation, they're responsible for the current administration in Washington, D.C. They sent our boys over to Iraq, and of course, how many people have died unnecessarily because of the policies that they brought about, and their excuse was, oh, it was just so much work. To really count all the ballots there in the county, what do you mean? You're in the election department, and there's no other elections coming, and why not do it? They did not want to do it. They knew it would have been, in my estimation, been game. But now the interesting thing is that when the Republican was voted out of office recently, he began shredding, the Secretary of State began shredding documents. And now the Democrat has come in, and Secretary of State in Ohio, and they're beginning to investigate the shredding of documents. Isn't it illegal to shred documents?
Oh, of course it is. And, you know, we don't know what he was shredding, and we don't, in fact, yet know for sure that it happened. They had received reports from folks who had been in the office previously, and so they've asked for that investigation, but you're damn right, it's very illegal to be shredding documents, and this was, but you know what, this is J. Kenneth Blackwell. He was above the rule of law as far as he was concerned. He did all sorts of things to game that system in 2004. He, in fact, he wasn't actually voted out of office in Secretary of State. He decided to run for governor instead of the state of Ohio. And he was the Republican candidate. He was thoroughly trounced, I'm happy to say. But, you know, the state of Ohio has been left to pay for his horrible election administration. And as you say, the entire country, frankly, the entire world has been left to deal with the results of the way he gamed that election. Remember, in Ohio, in 2004, had six votes. You know, they like to say, oh, it was a big margin of difference in that election, and the recount wouldn't have mattered or whatever. Nonsense. It had six votes in each Ohio precinct gone for John Kerry instead of George Bush. John Kerry would have been the president now. That's not a lot of votes in each precinct in Ohio, and you know, so this notion that it wasn't even close, it wasn't like Florida in 2000, nonsense. It was very close, and it points out just exactly how important each vote is, and how important it is that we actually count each vote accurately.
And of course, I didn't like John Kerry, but I didn't like either candidate. They both came from the exactly same secret society. When both of them were asked about the secret society they belong to, why, of course, both of them said it's too secret to discuss.
I didn't like John Kerry either. I didn't vote for John Kerry, but you know, it's not about who you like or who I like. It is about who the voters choose, and if they choose someone who is bad for them, who's going to do a lousy job, well, we get the government that we deserve. But we only get that government that we deserve, you know, if in fact, we have transparency and accuracy so that we know that in fact the guy or gal who won really was the winner. Right now we don't know, and we've now had two elections in a row, that have been questionable, to put it kindly. And, I don't think our democracy can long stand any more of these elections where we go through and have questions about who won. You know, we've got five, as I mentioned earlier, we've got five different contests right now that have been challenged from November of 2006, that have been challenged in Congress, which is the final arbiter for these things. And again, we don't know who won those, races. And in fact, we've got evidence in a number of them, clear evidence in at least one, that the person who was named the winner certainly did not win that race. That was down in Sarasota, Florida.
Now, we've got Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Mike, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah. It's about the movie Stealing America, Vote by Vote. You guys have seen it? Has Brad seen that?
I'm trying to remember. I've seen so many of these films now. I can't remember if I saw that one or
okay.
Not. Did you have a specific question on it?
But I hear the music, Dan.
Okay, fine. Well, we'll you just hang on. We'll get to that as soon as we get back. And when we return, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Are you concerned about the voting process? Do you understand that the electronic voting machines cannot be trusted? Do you understand there are people out there who will steal elections that are dishonest? Do you understand that in the exit polls, John Kerry won the election in Ohio? Whether you like John Kerry or not, I mean, I certainly didn't like him at all. I think that, of course, they stole the election in 2004. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Brad Friedman. And before we go on, we'll get to all the details when we get back, when I pull out of the stations. And Mike, did you have a question for our guest?
Well, yeah, about that movie, Stealing America Vote by Vote. Towards the end of it, there's a segment about, I believe it was Congressman Dennis Hastert. It was a Democratic congressman. And the clip.
No, Hastert was a Republican.
Oh, well, then I've got that. I busted that one up. It was I have to go back and look at it again. But this was a Democratic congressman who was, and all this is on the night of the last presidential election. And he had gone to vote, and he saw the machine switch his vote from Democratic to Republican for Bush. He didn't want to vote for Bush. He went back and tried it again. He voted for Kerry. And it switched his vote. He saw it switch his vote back to Bush. So he calls the Kerry campaign headquarters and tells them what happened, and they told him to be quiet and not say anything about it. So I have an idea that not only did Bush steal the election, but Kerry gave it away, and he knew it.
Have you heard any similar stories, Brian?
Well, I've heard similar stories, certainly, about folks trying to vote for the Democrat and having it flip over to Republicans. I have not heard any reports, however, of Kerry telling, or the Kerry campaign telling someone to be quiet about it. That would be a surprise to me, and
well,
I certainly have to see that film to know exactly what
it
was.
It's worth a look.
Indeed.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say it's certainly worth a look, although I suspect if the story is as you told it, I likely would have heard it by now. I know that Kerry was very bad in Ohio and should have asked for a recount. I know that John Edwards was furious about the fact that he didn't. And you know, there's certainly been other questions about Kerry, but I had not heard the report that he told anyone to be quiet about something like that. That
was
surprising.
Not Kerry himself, but it was his campaign headquarters.
Right. I mean, I'd be surprised even if the campaign headquarters had instructed someone to be quiet about it. But I'd certainly like to learn more about that story and who that congressman actually was. I don't think it was Denny Hastert, though.
Sure it wasn't Denny Hastert. Okay, thanks very much, Mike. Our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I think that this is such an important subject, and we always enjoy having Brad Friedman here with us. In just a moment when we get back, we're going to tell you how to get hold of his organization and, of course, to get the material. And, of course, if you get on his email list, why, you'll be besieged with articles once, sometimes even twice a day. But they're fascinating material, and we need to be on the cutting edge of this. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Mimi calling in from Van Nuys, and we'll get to her in just a minute. But right now, Brad, let's tell people how they can get to your website. Tell them how to get on your email list.
Indeed. You can go to bradblog.com, which, as you suggest, is updated several times a day on all of these stories as they break. And we've got a lot of investigative reports coming up on all of this and what's been going on, what went on in 2004. Tons of material there, and as I always like to make available to your listeners only, Stan, if you'd like to be on the Brad Blog alert list, which is generally for the media, but since you've mentioned it a couple times, I'd like to make it available to your listeners. If you send me an email to brad@bradblog.com and just put in the subject line, add me to your list, I will go ahead and put your email address in there, and you'll get those notable items from the Brad Blog as they break.
Well, thank you very much. And our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, let's go to Mimi calling from Van Nuys. Hi, Mimi. How are you?
I'm fine, Dr. Stan. Thanks for taking my call. Thanks for having Brad Friedman on. He's a wonderful guest, and I'm thrilled that that there's so much concern on your part, because I've been studying this problem for 2 years. But when you were talking about the pencil and the paper and the ballot box, which is what we know as marking your ballot and having it counted transparently, marking it in secret, counting it in public. I was thinking about, you know, some of the disabilities people, and I've worked for a long time with a theater for the handicapped, and I'm thinking about some of the vets coming home. And I know in the disability community there's been an argument that they need some kind of assistance and that they feel really left behind when people don't pay attention to their voting needs. So I would love to hear Brad talk about this, because I know we can get that kind of accessibility for people who need it, and we can still have our votes counted securely. So I'll take my answer off the air, okay?
All right. Thank you, Mimi. Brad, what about people with disabilities? Can't anybody really vote absentee as I do routinely? That way I know it, they're going to have to count it.
Well, you don't be so sure about that, Dr. Stan, because, in fact, those votes as absentee ballots are also scanned by optical scan machines. And if, as we talked about before, if you don't audit those paper ballots that are scanned by machines, you don't know if they're accurate or not. But Mimi raises a great question, and this has been used as the basis, really, for a lot of the folks who had pushed for the original Help America Vote Act. It's a disastrous bill that was written by Bob Ney of Ohio, the congressman who is now in jail. So he's a felon, but we're stuck with his terrible Help America Vote Act, or HAVA, which essentially required at least one voting machine, one voting system, not a machine, but a voting device in each polling place that would be accessible to disabled voters, whether they're blind or handicapped or so on and so forth. Well, what's happened is the bad guys in the voting machine companies have used this provision to suggest that we have to have these electronic voting machines in every precinct, everywhere, for everybody, which is just nonsense. Now, there are some of these touchscreen machines that we talked about. They can, in fact, help blind and disabled voters to vote independently and privately. That's a good thing, but you have to separate the DRE, which is Direct Recording Electronic System. This is the system that actually counts the votes inside, with the touchscreen interface, which is useful to disabled voters, but you don't have to have the machine itself count the ballots. So there are devices out there. One is called the AutoMark, for example, that allows a blind person or a disabled person to be able to vote privately and independently. And what it does is it prints out a ballot, which is then taken and run through an optical scan machine separately, a machine other than the device that was used to vote on. That's what you have to do, and a lot of the bad guys out there are using this canard, frankly, that, oh, disabled voters, blind voters, they need DREs. Nonsense. There are many alternatives that they could use that will accomplish the same thing and that will give us the accuracy that we all need and the confidence that we all need in these elections. I remember speaking with a blind fella down in Florida a year or two ago. I was interviewing him on the air about this and saying, hey, you know, you got the National Federation for the Blind out there. They're fighting for these touchscreen DRE systems. They've been given $1 million from Diebold themselves. They were made a donation to the National Federation for the Blind, so no wonder they were out there supporting Diebold's machine. And this blind fellow said to me, look, Brad, I may be blind, but I'm not stupid. I, too, would like a paper ballot that can be verified in the case of any question in an election, and that will be counted, you know, before the results are reported. That's what we need across America, and it's time a lot of these folks stop hiding behind disabilities voters and blind voters to get these machines that are not needed by that community.
And of course, the thing that really bothers me, Brad, is, if you're blind, how do you know with a keyboard there, how do you know whether you're voting Republican or Democrat? Somebody's going to have to be there to tell you, I mean, what's on the screen. And so, you know, it really seems to be, you know, really sort of a self-defeating program.
There is technology, in fact, that would allow voters to vote independently, blind voters, for example, because the ballot is changed into audio or braille or some other tactile ballot that they can, you know, they can read who exactly it is that they're voting for. But in fact, yes, they are not served by the current system. None of the current voting systems out there really accomplish allowing blind voters to vote completely independently. And so, yeah, there is the option that you talk about. They're allowed to bring someone in to help them vote. They can vote by mail. And in the meantime, if we must use a device in the polling place that makes it easier for them to vote, let's not make it a device that scrambles democracy for everyone. And that's where we're heading right now.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Hi, Jack. I mean, Dr. Stan, thanks again. Wonderful guest. I want to ask whether there's intimate collusion in the ownership of those voting machine companies and those, and both of the, well, actually it's one party, two different names. And then can't the Electoral College be compromised so that a desired Bonesman election outcome, et cetera, couldn't be realized? And thirdly, aren't the taxpayers' money responsible for purchasing these electronic machines?
All right, let's take one question at a time. The very first question, is there any interlock between these voting companies and political parties? And even more than that, I'd heard that, of course, there was a relationship between one of these voting machine companies and the current administration of Hugo Chavez down there in Venezuela. So who owns these companies? Are they above politics? Are they above integrity?
They're nothing of the kind. They're privately run. The preponderance of the companies are strongly Republican supporters, and I mean in a big way, including Diebold, who's CEO, who now, thank God, has been pushed out in no small part of this. But he sent out a fundraising letter to Republicans before the 2004 election, promising to deliver the electoral vote in Ohio to George W. Bush. Well, mission accomplished, apparently. And now he was a Bush pioneer, which means he brought in over $100,000 for George W. Bush, and he's running one of the biggest voting machine companies in America. That's Diebold, and a once great company who has just completely ruined their reputation because of the way the partisan, political, secretive way they've operated in this business all along. Most of the other companies are also a strong lean towards Republican causes and candidates. They've given a lot of money there. The one exception, as you mentioned, is the company Sequoia, which was purchased by a Venezuelan concern by the name of Smartmatic, which may be in some way tied to Hugo Chavez. Now, Sequoia denies it, and Smartmatic is in the process of trying to sell the Sequoia company to someone. I don't know who would buy it, frankly, because the machines they put out are terrible, and I think they're going to be facing a lot of liability. Same with Diebold. But it all underscores the point that whether it's a Republican or a Democrat who, you know, runs these companies, frankly, it doesn't matter. We shouldn't have any private company that has that kind of power to run our public elections. And in fact, to answer one of the other questions, yes, this is all taxpayer money. And in fact, the Help America Vote Act put out $3.9 billion of federal taxpayer money to buy these machines that went straight to these companies that were supporting the Republican candidates that passed the bill in the first place. So it's a scam, Dr. Stan, from top to bottom.
And I really think this is really what's so terrible about the whole thing is the people in Washington, D.C. spend money like it's going out of style. I mean, they have no sense of fiscal responsibility. I mean, you know, why in heaven's name would the federal government be giving money away like it was candy, you know, to the various states to bribe them into putting voting machines that can be rigged?
Yep, privatize our election system. That's what they did. That said, they're spending the same amount in about a week in Iraq as they spent for the entire electoral system via the Help America Vote Act. So this nonsense that, we've already paid for these machines, we can't get rid of them now, it'll cost too much to replace them, is absolute nonsense. If we have that kind of money to throw down the sewer in order to fight this silly war out there in Iraq, surely we have enough money to make sure we have a democracy back here in this country that we can all rely on. And it's especially ironic, as you recall, George Bush used to run around and talk about the reason we were in Iraq was to spread democracy. Well, he's acting like he's concerned about democracy out there in Iraq, but nobody, and I mean nobody, is back here watching our own democracy in this country. There's a few exceptions. Obviously, I think bradblog.com is doing our part. My organization, velvetrevolution.us, and one of the greatest supporters right now fighting this fight and fighting to get the Rush-Holt bill that we talked about previously, to get that amended so that it bans DRE touchscreen systems, is the Progressive Democrats of America. And they've got a great a petition out there that you can easily send. Take you 30 seconds to fill it out, and it'll go to your members of Congress if you go to pdamerica.org. And I don't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, Libertarian, Green, Independent, or anything else. We need to make sure our election system is accurate and transparent for everyone. And right now, pdamerica.org is really leading the way in this regard. And I hope everyone within earshot will get themselves to a computer and, at the very least, stop by there and make your voice heard in Congress right now that we need to ban DRE touchscreen voting in America.
Well, is there any leadership at the Republican Party that would say, let's get rid of this? Because this would be what I would think would be a very, very popular issue all across America, and the Republicans need at least some issue that's popular. I don't think they're doing very well with the war, and, of course, the expansion of the war and all of the other things that they're doing. Or is there any real leadership, you know, within the hierarchy of the Democrat Party that says, let's do something? We cannot wait on this, especially when they're talking about moving the elections up here, you know, for next year.
Well, on the federal level, on the Republican side, no, there is nobody, there is nothing, and in fact, they have spent the last 2 years, 4 years at least, trying to keep legitimate election reform from coming forward. There were quite a few bills put forward in the previous Congress, in the 109th Congress, and they were not, they didn't even allow those bills to come to committee. So, no, the leadership is completely gone on the Republican side as far as election reform goes on the federal level. That said, I will give credit to Charlie Crist, the new governor down there in Florida, who has worked together with Congressman Wexler from Florida to announce that they want to put, I think it's $32 million into the system to replace all of the touchscreen voting machines down there in Florida and send them the way of the butterfly ballot and replace them with paper-based systems. So we are seeing a leadership from the Republican down there in Florida. It's a shame that it's that we don't see the Democrats, frankly, doing the same thing around the country yet. And it's a shame that so many of the Democrats at the federal level are concerned about election reform, but they're getting it entirely wrong, and they're putting forward bills that are not going to keep us from having what we saw in Ohio in 2004, Florida in 2000, or Sarasota in 2006, where 18,000 ballots disappeared on touchscreen voting machines.
18,000 ballots just so disappeared, huh?
They disappeared in a race that was decided by 369 votes. Imagine that, Stan.
Well, I think we've got a lot of problems here in America, and if we don't get it straightened out, well, I think we can just say sayonara to what was once certainly the land of the free and the home of the brave. Well, what can people do right now? You say you go to this website and certainly let the congressman know. I think that people ought to be talking about this all the time. I think this is one of the key issues of our time. I think it is one of the least emphasized issues of our time, and yet I certainly applaud you for what you're doing and getting the information out. But I think we need to keep this constantly in front of the American people.
We do.
I know that you're doing everything you can to accomplish that. Oh, isn't it, Jack? Are you still there?
Yes, Dr. Stagg.
Do you have another question?
If I may, please. I just wanted to know whether the sanctity
the security of the Electoral College can be insured.
Ah. No, it can't, because essentially the Electoral College, is determined, the number of votes in the Electoral College is determined in a state-by-state democracy, and all it takes is a single state, as we saw in Ohio. All it takes is a single state to game that, and furthermore, we see that all it takes is the votes in a single county, like Cuyahoga, which can flip the election. So, no, nothing is safe unless we have transparency and verifiability, and that's why we need to move immediately to a paper-based system.
That's right. Politics are local, aren't they?
Yeah. Indeed they are.
Think locally, but think globally, but act locally, Jack. Bye-bye. Great. God bless. All right, fine. Well, of course, our guest this evening, Brad Friedman. Brad, one more time, let's get your webpage or blog spot out.
Very good. I want to point folks to bradblog.com. And if you add a /Holt, H-O-L-T, at the end, bradblog.com/Holt, you'll get links to articles and action points and things that you can do to make a difference right now. Don't count on anyone else to do it. You got to do it yourself.
All right. Hold on. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Brad, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
All right. Well, again, I want to point folks to bradblog.com and bradblog.com/Holt to get all the action points and things that you need to do to inform yourself with information. There's action points of online petitions that you need to send. One I mentioned earlier at pdamerica.org, but you'll see a link to that over at bradblog.com/Holt. There's also a link to a page which will give you the phone numbers of your congressmen and of your senators. We need to raise some hell out there. And, I think a lot of people think that the media is going to take care of this and the politicians are going to take care of it. No, they're not. This country is ours. This democracy is ours. And until we realize that, until we realize how one person does make a difference, and I have seen it, Dr. Stan, time and time again, one person standing up, making noise, sending a letter to the editor at their local paper, calling their local county election registrar and demanding they open up their system to be tested, hack-tested, so that we know it's secure, demanding transparency. It is the people on the ground, the ragtag band of citizen patriots from coast to coast, who have kept this issue alive and who have moved the ball forward to the place that we are. But I would love to double or triple the size of that ragtag band of citizen patriots right now, because we need everyone working together here to save our democracy.
I think it was really so interesting that you had happened to know had talked to on several occasions the fellow who's in charge of voting over in Monterey County.
Oh, yeah.
A man now who's under indictment for stealing. And he had said to you, when you'd asked him about the voting integrity of voting, he'd said, well, you've just got to trust us.
Yes.
What were his words to you?
Yes, you have to have faith and trust in your elections officials. In this case, that would be me, he said to me. And that was Tony Anchundo, the 13-year registrar of voters in Monterey County, California. A few months later, he was charged with 43 criminal counts of forgery, embezzlement, grand theft, larceny. And a few months after that, he pled no contest to all 43 criminal charges. That's the sort of guy who, when they tell us to trust me, I say, no, sir, I'm not going to trust you. That's not what our system is about. And any honest election official out there will tell you the same thing. Don't trust me. Come in and see for yourself, because we've got a transparent system. Make them be transparent. Make sure you can verify everything and trust no one. That's what this system is built on.
And I really think it's so vitally important that people get involved and help us get the word out across America. God bless you, Brad. Thanks very much. We'll look forward to talking to you again.
Always enjoy it, Dr. Stan. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we do hope that many of you out there will, take heed of what Brad is saying. He's working very hard at this. And we're making progress. I'm really pleased that here in California, the Secretary of State, and this is the first time I've ever voted for a Democrat candidate, but I voted for the Democratic Secretary of State because the Republican was going to go right along with a corrupt, dishonest system. And so I voted for the Democratic Secretary of State. She won, and just hope and encourage her at every step to get rid of these voting machines, because they can be rigged. And obviously there are people who want them to be rigged. They want to get the perception that that you have a right to vote for the candidate, not of your choice, the candidate of their choice, because they're going to rig the elections. And they do rig the elections, and they've rigged the elections back there in Ohio, and they've rigged them here in California. I know when my good friend D.V. Kidd ran, of course, when our good friend Joan Paris ran here for the assembly, and she was winning when she went to bed at midnight, and suddenly the figures just immediately flipped as soon as she went to bed, and in the morning she'd lost the election. How can you do that when one person's so far ahead? Why, you've rigged the elections, ladies and gentlemen. It can happen here, and that was in over there in Monterey County, where the election officials said, just trust me. Just trust me. Well, we do hope that many of you want to get our book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, which will begin to explain what's really going on in America. You would also get our DVD by the same name, or the video by the same name. You need to understand that behind everything going on are powerful spiritual forces. We have a great new DVD by Constance Cumby. It's the video that was done, and we've just put it on the DVD. I watched it Saturday. It's really quite good. I watched the whole thing through from beginning to end, and she tells you the background of this movement, which is in complete control of our society today and controlling both political parties. We can call it the New Age movement. We can call it whatever you want to. But there are people who have a different worldview because they worship a different God. And Constance does a great job. You need to see her video or DVD. You need to hear our 4-tape set of interviews with her, either the 4-tape set or the 4-CD set, and then read her book, Brotherhood of Dark, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, because that book certainly changed my life almost 25 years ago. And understand that they really intended to bring their world ruler in 1982, and it didn't work. 25 years later, they have the same plan. And that's why I'm firmly convinced, although it is totally illogical to even consider it, why I'm firmly convinced that they are going under one guise or another to war with Iran. It would be illogical. I mean, Ahmadinejad is obviously a plant. He's making all these stupid statements. He doesn't have any support from the Iranian people. But, of course, you have to understand who put the Iranian government in power. We did, back in 1979, when we toppled the Shah, when we actually, I can remember so well, when the American ambassador went to the Shah of Iran and said, you will leave tomorrow. And that is exactly the way things are run. If you don't believe it, you need to get my video called World Revolution. And there you'll see my interview with Ambassador Earl Smith, who was the ambassador to Cuba in 1958. And he was instructed to tell Batista, President Batista, who had been democratically elected as the president of Cuba, contrary to everything you've heard, he had told him, you will leave tomorrow. He was ordered to do that, and that brought Fidel Castro to power, and they knew he was a communist, and he immediately slaughtered 15,000 people. 15,000 people with show trials, and then just lined them up and executed and had them shot. Why do we talk about genocide or murder by Fidel Castro? Why do we allow him to come to this country to address the Council on Foreign Relations and have meetings with David Rockefeller and carouse around with David Rockefeller's daughters? If you don't believe it, read David Rockefeller's memoirs, available from Radio Liberty. Our number 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty.
tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.